Well, welcome to the roundtable for, what is it, September 11th. Boy, key date in history, that's for sure. A couple of things here. These glasses suck. Anyway, got Mr. Bracken backstage. I'll ring him on in just a second. Been all day at the range, so I'm a little disorganized today. So just bear with me. It's been a day, that's for sure. The debate, that's all I'm going to say about debate. One, I don't care. Two, no one's going to change their vote. Three, I don't care. I don't give a shit about who the renter in the White House is. I don't give a shit about what the press says. I don't even care what the pundits say. I don't care. It's not going to affect the outcome. They're already poised to cheat. There are already set conditions so that nobody is going to accept the outcome of the election. So, not going to care. And plus, I don't care about the renter in the White House because it doesn't matter who's in the White House. They don't run the show. Everybody around them runs the show. And let me just bring Matt on. I'm just going to bring Matt on because Matt's got a better analogy for this than I could possibly think of. Matt, thanks for jumping on. Appreciate that.
No problem.
Yeah, so I was just lamenting about the debate. So I'm curious to get your feedback on that.
Yeah, it was pathetic. I mean, I would have liked to have seen, for example, somebody with the rhetorical skills of a Vivek Ramaswamy or J.D. Vance, you know, that can actually parse sentences and paragraphs and make points that last a whole minute. Neither one of those guys last night could do it. Trump at least could, you know, bang the piano with his elbows a little bit better when he got on immigration, for example. You know, he at least hammered the right notes. But it was certainly an embarrassment to the rest of the world. Like, you know, these are the faces of American leadership. It's kind of pathetic. I mean, one of them is going to be president next January. Think of that.
Well, that's the crazy part, right? Is this is the best we can do for the highest office in the land. That to me is the part that sticks in my craw.
So, well, and you're right that what you call the renter in the White House doesn't run the show. I don't think that's entirely true. I think that you know, at least 10 years. I remember clearly the Kavanaugh hearings. She is a lot smarter than she lets on. I think her stupid non sequitur stream of consciousness word salad, I think it's partly an act. It's allowed her to slide under the radar. Like, look at her. She's so goofy. She's no threat. You don't have to worry about her. When she was in the Senate hearings for Kavanaugh, because she has a quote unquote legal background. So she was on, I guess, the Judiciary Committee, something like that. But she was a vicious bitch. She was somebody who would easily give the order to, you know, wipe out the czar's children in the basement, you know, that kind of absolute psycho cruelty. Absolute willingness to totally lie. She'll tell you no restriction on abortion to the last, you know, till the water breaks, to the ninth month, the last day, and then say there's no, you know, that she isn't. I mean, she'll say she's going to confiscate or buy back our guns. They never sold them to me, so they can't buy them back. You know, mandatory buyback anytime, of course, never use the enemy vernacular. Mandatory buyback is confiscation. So she has been pro-confiscation for years. That's who she really is. She's not just a weather vane who's going to be like Biden. You know, here, put on a MAGA hat, Grandpa. Okay. I mean, he's just a fool. She's not a fool. She's an evil bitch. Replay some of the Kavanaugh hearing and you'll see. I mean, she was quoting and piling on with all of the bogus, no witness, can't remember when, where, rape allegations. She was virtually calling Justice Kavanaugh, you know, a gang rape leader in high school day after day during those hearings, based on no evidence. She's
and look how that turned out. Evil.
But if she is, it's not like a president has no power. The president can say we're going to give weapons that can fire into Russia or not. If he says no, it's very hard for the generals to get around that. If he says yes, it's very hard for the generals to get around that, even in his senile state. She will run the Justice Department. She will absolutely go after anybody that questions the election coming up. So if there's vote fraud, in your face, flagrant vote fraud, she's going to empower all of her U.S. attorneys to charge people with, you know, made up lawfare crimes based on what we saw against Trump and Bannon and Navarro. She's going to have, you know, people arrested in airports for putting out petitions to question elections. I mean, we're seeing this already in some of the Midwest states and Arizona. Yep. They're putting people in jail for questioning rigged elections. And it will be 1,000 times worse if she's in. And my favorite current working analogy is the airplane. I don't know if anybody here has seen the movie Flight with Denzel Washington, where he's an alcoholic airline pilot. I mean, a serious alcoholic sneaking vodka in the cockpit. But during a crisis, when the plane has a serious mechanical failure, he does a great landing, puts it into a field, and only a few people die. I would rather have President Trump compared to Denzel Washington, a drunk alcoholic pilot who's trying to land the airplane in a field, than a crazy communist like Harris, who's trying to fly the airplane right into the side of the mountain. I mean, this is not a it doesn't matter coin toss election. Even if they rig it to the extent where the red line or the blue line goes up super high at 3 a.m., if it's clear, if it's more clear than ever that it's rigged, then going into civil war, it helps to rally our troops to know that we all agree we're now living not under rule of law. If half of the country is still thinking, or most of the country is still thinking, well, you know what, it's not likely that she got 90 million votes and Trump got 40 million, but that's what they say. And the FBI says they're going to put you in jail if you question it. The more blatant the cheat is, the better it will be for our side going into a civil war. So I'm still going to vote for Trump. I have no illusions that he's like the great guy. I know the vaccine, all of these things. I get it. But I'd rather have Denzel Washington drunk, trying to land the plane in the field, compared to Kamala Harris, who's going to basically, you know, hijack the plane, land it in Havana, and have us all put in a gulag.
Well, I think this is going to go kinetic no matter what. I think we're past the point of... So you've heard me say this 100 times, Matt, and we can agree to disagree, because, by the way, you called that out in enemies foreign and domestic, gun confiscation. So I swear you have crystal ball, man. I'm telling you. And the way you described is exactly how these
one book.
Yep. It's exactly how
false flag. Yep. And false flag on page one, shooting into a stadium. And the perp is a veteran who's killed by the SWAT team. Right. So the semi-automatic weapon, the perp is a veteran who's been sending angry, crazy letters to politicians. And he's dead. And then you get a president and a Congress that a week later, they say, turn in the semi-automatic rifles. Knowing the people that actually did it, they know that very few of us will comply with the law.
Oh, fuck no, I'm not going to comply.
They don't care about, they're not like taking a moral stance on guns. They just want to increase their power. They want the ATF's, palace to be as big as the FBI's palace. They want their bureaucracy to expand, you know, exponentially.
Well, they've already got it, right? Because they went down to Epstein Island, they took all the evidence, and now they're leveraging everybody in D.C. How do you think they got a building bigger than the Pentagon? What if What does the FBI need a building bigger than the Pentagon for?
Panopticon. Yeah, they want the total surveillance state. But, you know, they're
and
it's becoming, obviously, it's going to become very hard to play Robin Hood in the woods. That kind of a civil war is going to be very difficult. I don't know if you've caught the video from this week where the Russians are now using fiber optic guided drones.
Yeah.
So they're not subject to jamming. And just a little quad rotor drone with like maybe, you know, a half kilo warhead is zooming around inside of warehouses and garages, finds like four guys hiding in the corner and just flies in and kills them. It's inside of buildings, like flying through windows and open doors. You know, the people at the other end of that control are going to be blue-haired, face-pierced freaks that think MAGA Republicans should die. And and we've learned from the global war on terror, there's a little bit of a moral qualm about people like constantly dropping Hellfire missiles on weddings in Pakistan. You know, people start wondering who's dying at the other end. So they distribute the responsibility. You know, one person's one office's job is just coming up with a list of names, right? The next office is given a list of, you know, possible outcomes, like they deserve a Hellfire missile or a mini Hellfire.
Well, I think that's all AI now.
And somebody else just gets a grid coordinate on a map and is told to push the button and drop the mini Hellfire through your roof.
You know, I want to go back to something real quick though, Matt, because you were going to go somewhere and I interrupted you. But so two things. So they've set conditions so no one will accept the outcome of the election. They've already done that, clearly, right? So they've set conditions for that. They've also set conditions to where they can overcome any mass voting, any mass attendance by conservatives and even Democrats that have jumped ship and moved to Trump. Because I would contend to everyone in the audience, get away from the performance last night. I think everybody in this country, even the illegals, have already decided who they're going to vote for, and they're not going to change their vote at this point. There's no information that's going to sway enough of the voters for them to not be able to cheat. And
the illegals don't vote themselves. Illegals are just names and databases that will be mass voted.
That's what I mean. They've already decided what their vote is, right? So, they've already set conditions to install Harris, which is why I think they're going to install Harris. And I don't think Harris is their first choice. But that said, the other thing that I see happening is at some point, this will go kinetic. It's inevitable now.
I think they're absolutely setting conditions, and it's what Michael Yann always talks about. It's conditions, not sparks. You know, his analogy is, you know, a fully loaded jetliner can crash into a rainforest and it just puts itself out. But, you know, a spark out in dry California brushland, you know, can set the whole town on fire. And they've been setting the conditions for the big bonfire. I'm sure there are useful idiots that literally believe they're helping Haitians, bringing 5% of the island of Haiti into America in the last 5 years, bringing 5% of Haiti here, then opening a door to chain migration. Everybody that's made legal now can bring their extended family, clan, village, valley. Essentially, they've said, Haiti, move to America. And these are like, I'm sorry, they're not only extremely low IQ, but they're savages. You know, the animals that are going missing, especially like, you know, the cats, they're not just for food, it's for voodoo and witchcraft. You know, this is, you know, like the Cuban offshoot is called Santeria. When the black Cubans came during Mariel, that's when you started seeing, like, you know, cat's heads nailed to people's doors, things like that. This is a very crazy voodoo population, but they're going to be pushed through the ranks into the police force. You can bet. I think 4 or 5 years ago, I think she was actually a tourist, like a blonde tourist from Australia. She was stopped by police, and a Somali Minneapolis cop had no idea what he was doing, a total DEI over promotion, shot this tourist and killed her. You know, she had come out of her house in a nightrobe with her phone to like report a stalker, report a crime, peeping Tom, something like that. And this Somali cop shot and killed her. She was the victim calling in the crime. This is going to be repeated over and over again. Don't think it ends with these Haitians snatching cats and dogs. They're going to be promoted into the police force. When you get pulled over by a Haitian that can't speak English and you don't kowtow and show the proper respect, I mean, you're going to be in huge trouble. And this is not done because they love Haitian police. It's done because they're chest bumping the right. This is the part of the movie, you know, where Bruce Dern and all the nasty cowboys are like walking up and saying your wife's working at the saloon in the upstairs rooms, shall I say, and your wife's with you and you're just trying to, you know, walk down the street, where they're provoking and they're provoking and instigating at this point. That's what this putting 20,000 into Springfield, Ohio, or you know, 10,000 into some little town in Pennsylvania. It's not just Ohio. That's got the news. I mean, it's Aurora, it's El Paso, it's all over the place.
And it's bigger than that too.
And it's really in your face. It's really in the face of lower income Black and white Americans, because you can't afford the rent. Your landlord says, by the way, next month your rent is going from $1,200 to $1,600. Get out. And guess who's moving in? A Haitian who's getting $5,000 a month. I've been following this all day. Somebody who works, you know, works in as a cashier in Springfield said she can see on the EBT card, you know, the free Haitian magic money card, they just bought $500 of groceries. And there's 5,000 more on the card. She can see that as the cashier. Americans aren't getting $5,000. They're not getting rental assistance. They get a driver's license. They've got a special DMV with Haitian translators because they can't speak English. These are people that can't read and write. So they're basically getting coached through the process of getting a license. And if any of these guys manage to not have a car crash, they'll probably be cops. In 5 years, they'll be pulling you over. This is all at the stage of, what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it? They're trying to provoke a kinetic reaction.
Absolutely. And they're also trying to. So two things I want to drill down on that you just said. The first one is they're moving 20,000 into a small community because they know that they will form their own community and keep everybody outside of it. And then eventually the police won't even go in there. Just like in Minnesota, just like in West Virginia, just like in California, it's by design to set up small enclaves that are not affiliated with, and they don't assimilate with the rest of the community. And you're right, they probably suck at driving because the Clintons have gone down there through the Clinton Foundation and destroyed Haiti.
Well, they barely have roads. You know, Haiti, Port-au-Prince, Haiti is the biggest city on the planet that has no sewage system. Let that sink in. You got a city of millions of people, no sewage system. In 1802 or whenever it was, they had the slave revolt. They killed all the white people. They killed all of the mixed race people. They descended into total voodoo, witchcraft, occult savagery for two centuries. They don't have the intellectual capital to build roads that would require you to have a driver's license. You know, if one guy out of 50 can drive a Jeep, that's like an amazing accomplishment. Most of that island has virtually no roads because they're not paved and they're washed out by rainstorms. You know, they deforested it. You can see that from space, the Dominican Republic Haiti line, because one side is deforested. What happens when you deforest a tropical island with lots of rain? The roads are washed out. So they've actually gone so far. They're actually way beyond where they were, say, in 1910, when the Marines were there the first couple times. they've actually slid way backwards. It's sort of like, I would say, the Republic of the Congo. You can say what you want about the Belgians, but they had railroads that ran from one end of the country to the other. And as soon as the Belgians were kicked out in the 60s, nobody maintained a railroad from that day on. So the infrastructure just collapses. I saw a picture in one of the good European Twitter accounts. I think it's Radio Genoa, and it's a picture from Lisbon, Portugal, where you can tell there was a beautiful fountain, like something 60, 70 yards across, where like Bellagio, it would have had all of the, pipes for like a water display. And now it's just full of feces, carcasses, trash. The water's brown and green. The obviously the fountain part's not working. It's just a stagnant pond. This is the West. This is the future of the West. This is the bust out phase of Western civilization. Everybody has seen Goodfellas 100 times. There's the takeover of the, I forget what the bar is called, the Hawaiian Hut, something like that. The bar owner wants some help from the mob. Bad idea. The mob uses it to just launder stolen goods through it, put everything on the account, sell it, take it in the front door, out the back door, sell it. Place goes bankrupt, then they burn it down. That's the bust out. That's where we are now, folks. We're in the bust out phase. And the looting has been accomplished by and large. Now they want to burn it down. When it's burned down, how do you get in there and do an arson investigation on America? They've burned it. They're getting it set to burn down. This is the stage in America where they're hanging all the, pink stuff, the sterno, the hanging sterno candles all over the bar and lighting them up. That's where we are right now. People have to understand that's where we are. This is the bust out phase of America. And we're like the Comanches and the Cheyenne up on the bluff, just watching the wagon trains coming in every day. Here's another 100 settlers. Where is this going to end? It ends with you dispossessed. It ends with you not being the owner of your country. That's where this ends.
We've already lost our country. I mean, let's call a spade, right? You have the elite in D.C. that are looting the country, and the oligarchs that are looting the country of all wealth. The banks literally just took over control of Bitcoin. And now they will not only monetize, but they will manipulate Bitcoin because they're calling it an asset. So we've already seen the transfer of wealth in 2008 to 2012. Now they're going after what's left.
And I would strongly advise people to get out of crypto while you can. Because for one thing, crypto only works when there's a grid and an internet. Never mind that they're going to declare it like a tool of terrorism. And all they need to do, you can say, well, they don't have my key. They can't do it. Yeah, they can. All they've got to do is say, crypto is a tool of terrorism. And every transaction above, $100 value must be reported to the IRS 48 hours in advance. And if you don't, 10 years for gangsterism, terrorism. Okay. And so then they'll do stings. Then they'll do stings. And they'll be like, this guy went to jail for 10 years because he did an unauthorized Bitcoin trade. You know what that'll do to the price of Bitcoin? The only things I'd invest in at this point are tangible assets, obviously things like gold, ammunition. But I mean, I would even think of things like cases of soap, stuff that you just take for granted. You can fake a lot of stuff, say for toilet paper. It's hard to fake like glasses, shoes, soap. We're going to be going into a period that there's no like limiting factor on the other end. There's no, don't worry, we're going to, they broke the elevator cables, but we're only going to go from the 21st floor to the 19th floor. Then we're going to stop and everybody can get off the 19th floor and pretend it's the old West and we'll get plows. That's not how it's going to work. When you break the cables on the 21st floor, you can fall all the way down. And I mean, down to like, starvation level, cannibalism level. And the people they're importing that'll eat cats and ducks now will have absolutely no moral compulsion about snatching a kid. Zero.
Well, so let's, I want to go a different direction with this, because I know where you're going with this. And I think there's another aspect of this I want to get your take on. So over the weekend, Man in America did this interview. I think the guy's name was David DeBenny. I don't know what the pronunciation is. His premise is, and when we did the round table with Ben Davidson, it was interesting because Ben Davidson talks about the disaster cycle. What if, and just what if, because it's hypothetical, what if the elite know that there's an event coming within the next 6 to 8 months? And they know that this event is going to be, it's going to be catastrophic for most of the planet, but they've already identified where the safe zones, quote unquote, safest zones are going to be. I mean, if I'm looking, because I covered this in my sit rep on Monday, I was talking about the bigger picture here, right? I don't get a sense the elite are panicked. I get the sense that
are you referring to like polar shift, magnetic,
whatever. Could be an asteroid, could be, I mean, pick your flavor, right? Because of the magnetic, Ben talks about the magnetic poles, the pole shift. Then he talks about the geomagnetic storms because the Earth's magnetic field is weaker and it's going to cause weirder weather, which we're already seeing. It's going to cause earthquakes and volcanoes to erupt, which we're already seeing because the Ring of Fire has been active now for the last 5 years. I mean, I'm just putting out
I'm absolutely there. I mean, as far as the possibility of that happening, I don't think it's necessary. I think that obviously something like that could be an accelerant. As far as solar flare ejecta, I don't think you can predict where it'd be the safe space, because I don't think that there's such a timing of the universe that anybody could say, oh, when this solar flare gets shot out of the sun, it's going to definitely hit North America and not China. I mean, that the synchronicity of all the gears is so perfect. I don't think when a solar flare ejecta hits Earth, it will depend on where the Earth was when it hit. And if China is hit or North America is hit, I think the whole planet is going to be a disaster in days. Of course, it would be better to be in Patagonia or, you know, Chile, Argentina. Of course, we could have nuclear events, not only a nuclear missile exchange, but just the fact that the grid goes down, supply chains break down, engineers aren't going to be able to maintain the cooling ponds at all these hundreds of nuclear plants. they've done nuclear plants the cheap way. We always do the cheap way. I mean, it's like I really respect Massey in Congress. He's one of the few that's talking about, you know, just a doom cycle of economics we're going into. Nobody wants to take hard medicine. You know, there's like one or two politicians that are saying, you have to drink castor oil. You have to. And everybody's like, no castor oil. We just want to party. We just want to eat cotton candy and watch Netflix. That's it. Yeah, but like the whole thing is about to go off the cliff. Doesn't matter. They want to ignore that. So nobody's ever going to take any hard medicine. So going back to the nuclear ponds, hundreds of these reactors, maybe some of them, depending on their construction, can be scrammed safely, but all of the spent fuel rods are just in ponds that have to have water running through them, have to. And they're not just going to run because, oh, well, they're next to a river and the river will naturally flow through there. These things have, you know, like I don't know what exactly how long, no more than a couple weeks at the most, of diesel backup generators to run the pumps to keep these ponds from boiling off and then melting down, or, you know, just burning. We could have Chernobyls all over the place. This is no solar flare ejecta, no Yellowstone or Naples super volcano. But I do have a feeling that all of these gears, like one of those old Aztec calendar deals, I feel like all of those gears are winding us towards like a comeuppance. And you could almost say it's like, you know, God did the flood. You know, it's going to be you pagans have been just getting out of control with the child sacrifice and the, you know, the witchcraft, and we're going to do a reset. What would he think now? I mean, they literally do allow abortion in the ninth month. There's a video going around today. A girl calls an abortion clinic and is talking to the lady at the clinic about it. It's like, don't worry, it's easier than having the baby. 8th month, 9th month, no problem. We put a needle through it into the baby's, through your belly into the baby's brain so that it won't feel any pain. Then we put something into the baby's heart to kill it. And then we basically get it out of you by cutting it to pieces. It's like, you think that if there is a God, if there is a spiritual pendulum in the universe, you don't think it's about to come smashing into us? We are really out of control in terms of the morality here. I mean, that we have traitors running our country, deliberately trying to wreck it. We have madmen in the military industrial complex trying to pick a nuclear war with Russia. All of the big banks and hedge funds know that the game is up, and they're trying to loot the system and build up their reserve in Patagonia or, you know, Argentina or New Zealand, Hawaii. But how many can get into their life raft? I mean, there's just a feeling that this is all coming together. You know, all of these waves are coming together.
I've said that before, right? A lot of people thought I was nuts when I said it, but I was watching in January all these lines of operations starting to move together in the same towards the same endpoint, right? And I don't think it's 2025. I think it's November, December of this year is what it looks like, because this whole cat thing, right? This they're killing pets, etc. I mean, the mainstream media is saying, okay, it's a hoax, which we expect, right? And by the way, I need to say this out loud. That was Queensryche. The song's called New Regal. It's off of, I can't think of what album it's off of. Anyway, that seemed appropriate today because of the shit show from last night. But I'm seeing all these lines of operation come together. I'm seeing these narratives like this, you know, Haitians killing cats, which stands to reason, right? Because if you're out of food, you're going to go after whatever food is around you, and they'll eat whatever. But
right, because of where they came from.
They're going to bring a culture with them. They're not going to change their mode of operation.
And not just for food, not just like out of necessity food for voodoo and witchcraft. These are the voodoo and witchcraft savages of our hemisphere. There's a little mental test I like to throw out once in a while. What does the poorest and most backward continent have in common with the poorest and most backward country in the Western Hemisphere? It's like, you know, cue the Jeopardy music. Haiti and Africa. What do they have in common? You know, might be something to do with IQ. If you have an average IQ in the 60s, I mean, the army won't take you if you have an IQ of like below 84, because it's not worth training you to sweep floors. If that's, you know, if it's going to take you 3 months to train you and all you can do is sweep floors, it's cheaper to hire somebody to sweep floors. So the army won't even take you. We're mass importing people too dumb to join the army at any level. They'll never be smart enough. Their kids won't be smart enough.
However,
the people that are mass importing 5% of Haiti, and we know through chain migration, 5% will become 15%, 30%. There has to be an endpoint to this, and it's going to be kinetic. It's going to be kinetic, and there's going to be a fury. But when this happens, there's going to be supply chain disruptions. I mean, don't think it's going to be like 1870 in the South with Klan rallies. But don't worry, Walmart's still getting deliveries. Supermarkets are still full. When this happens, there's going to be widespread shooting at trucks, things like this. You know, it'll be nobody goes into New York. We're going to just start shooting.
This is one of the points I wanted to bring up, Matt. So I'm glad you went there. One of the things I talked about on Monday, and this is a part that most people don't agree with or they don't get. And I think it's they just don't agree. But we've imported some of the hardest criminals on the planet over the last 4 years. And they have done relatively nothing.
And not as individuals, not like a John Dillinger here and an Al Capone there. The whole organization we invited.
Yes. That's
vertically and horizontally.
Right. We've new, like this, this, this Venezuelan gang thing is it, part of that to me seems like this is a test of the waters to see if they can draw a response with one organization. But you don't import these guys and you don't put these guys on the ground and not expect them to go off the reservation, because they are used to whatever, doing whatever it is that they want to do without any consequences whatsoever. And for them not to do anything for the last 3 years tells me they're highly organized, and they've been highly organized by either the CIA or by name your flavor, FBI, CIA.
Oh, I don't think they have their, I think that just doesn't give them credit. They have organization. You know, they, from, for what it was worth, even in Venezuela, most of these people were in prison. They were let out of prison to come to America.
Right, but why hold on?
They didn't need training by the CIA or the FBI. They just opened the door for them.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that they haven't really conducted operations like they normally would. I mean, they've done some here in Scottsdale with petty thefts and breaking into high-tech homes. And they're highly organized here, right? They could go right around the security systems. They can go right around the high-tech entry and exits. They can do all that, right? That's stock and trade for them. But the piece that's interesting to me is they haven't set up wholesale operations and gone against any of the U.S. organizations, which you would think they would butt heads against, because we had Russian mob here. We had street gangs here. We have our own apparatus here of criminality. And you can't tell me that
I haven't followed recently, say in the last 5 years. I used to follow it. I used to, you know, from like the French Connection days of, you know, the poppies coming out of like Turkey and Afghanistan, going to France, being smuggled in a Porsche or something to, you know, because at the time was considered heroin's extremely compact. So it was worth smuggling with high value smuggling rings from Europe into America. Then, you know, obviously cocaine, some things that were homemade like PCP had their moment. But now with fentanyl, it's so cheap and so pervasive. I'm not sure that the same kind of narco gang structure exists today, where it would be like the, you know, the Italian mob is now bumping up against the Colombia mob, you know, for cocaine distribution rights. I think that the fentanyl has become so cheap, so minute, easy to smuggle, and so pervasive that it's just been like a deluge of drugs. And the same kind of narcotic gang structure that we would have seen fighting over turf, I think that's largely gone away. And I think that, and I think partly that has moved into human trafficking, because that's become a more lucrative trade. You can bring enough fentanyl in a briefcase to kill everybody in a city. So big deal. Everybody's got fentanyl. You got it. You take your chances. Taking one ecstasy pill could be laced with fentanyl. You're dead. But you can't fake child trafficking. You got to actually have a child to have a child sex ring. You got to actually bring in the humans.
Well, that brings up 2 points, right? So here's where my head goes when you say that. So the human trafficking aspect of this, they are clearly working with DHS and with the CIA on this. There's no doubt about that, because the cartel activity on the border, when they kidnapped those Americans, they literally brought them back and handed them to DHS and apologized. There is some kind of an agreement at the border that excludes the drug side, but completely covers the human trafficking side, because that exchange said a lot of things without any words being exchanged. They literally brought them across the border and handed them over and said, "Here you go. We're sorry."
And there's the old joke. How do you how would you smuggle a suitcase nuke into America? You know, hide it inside of a load of drugs, because it's changing subtly right now because the Democrats are in. We need to get elected mode. Just like John McCain would start talking about the border, you know, 6 months before he would be coming up for election. The rest of the time he was open borders and voting with Democrats. So the Democrats are putting a little bit of pressure at the border, but for the last 3.5 years, basically, when the mass migration rushes the border over here, that serves as a shadow and a cover for the serious drugs and, you know, criminal gangs moving in over there unseen. And among them are hardcore terrorists. It's not just TDA, the Venezuelan gang. We're importing gangs from all over the place.
And we're human traffickers and terrorists. Yep. And we're going to have to fight them on the ground while we're mounting a fucking defense.
But the problem with fighting anybody now is when this thing goes really kinetic, I don't see how the supply chains continue operating.
They don't.
I like to use something, compare different civil wars. In Northern Ireland, you can say that was a civil war, but the British were still trying to arrest people. They weren't just doing murder squads. I mean, to a certain extent, they were putting bombs here and there, but they were trying to make cases. They'd snatch people, try to get a confession out of them, try to get more names out of them. It was still kind of a rule of law situation, but the supply chains continued. There was food in the stores. People still went to work. Then you go through different kinds of these wars. You look at the Bosnian Civil War. There's periods of a couple of years in the early 90s. There's no supply chain functioning. That's the what's Selco, you know, life in wartime, life in former Yugoslavia. You know, that's why I say buy like a case of soap. You know, you're like a woman will give herself away for a bar of soap. You know, like bar of soap. Not only can I be clean, I can clean my children. I can get the sores off my babies. I mean, things like hygiene will become, we just take everything for granted. We take clean water coming out of the shower. We never think, what if I turned the taps and nothing came out starting tonight? Nothing came out.
Well,
I've got a bar of soap, but no water. What am I going to do? Rub it on my face?
So I want to go. So that's, again, you bring up a good point, which, you know, I'm going to come back to something that when we talk about the natural disaster side of the house, right? Here's what I'm trying to reconcile, and I'll just put it on the table and then you can roll with it. I have three scenarios I see for why all of these oligarchs are building bunkers. And they're not, some of them aren't just building bunkers. They're building deep holes. I mean, deep holes. They know something's coming. And I don't think it's nuclear war. I think nuclear war is the last option. I mean, look, let's call a spade a spade. Israel, the US, and Europe, they need a world war so they can write down the debt. They absolutely positively need that. But a nuclear war does so much to the, and maybe they don't care. Maybe they think they can write it out in a fucking hole somewhere. But I get the sense, especially after listening to Ben Davidson and seeing some of the weird weather patterns, this is not weather engineering that we're seeing. This is the Earth responding to a changing cycle.
Well, and the Earth, I forget. I just saw his name, Carlson. I forget his name. He was on with Patrick Ben David like last week. He's got a huge beard. He looks like he looks like Randy Quaid kind of. He's got a beard like that. Carlson. I'm trying to think of his name, but he studies all of these catastrophes through history, you know, volcanoes, solar events, pole shifts, things like that. And what we've learned is that things don't happen slowly and gradually, like, oh, we went from an ice age to a
warming
period over many centuries and everybody had time to get used to things. No, you can reach a tipping point and things can shift very fast. In physics, and there's a term, the eutectic moment. That's like when a matter changes from like gas to liquid or liquid to mm-hmm. solid. So the whole pond is liquid and you can go swimming. It's real cold. And then very quickly, it's like frost and then the first layer of ice. Boom. Happens real fast. The ice salt, the polar ice caps covered like, you know, down to Pennsylvania, Minnesota, that was like under a sheet of ice. The sea levels were 400 feet lower and it can flip. And this is only 10,000 years ago. That's not a long time ago in geological time, that's nothing. When you're talking about extinction events that are measured in millions of years, like giant asteroid strikes, the ice age flips can happen very quickly. I mean, there was the Little Ice Age. So you had the end of the ice age. You had a warming period when the Vikings were sailing across the Atlantic and, you know, growing grapes on Greenland. Then you had a mini ice age coming into our American Revolution period, very cold. And then all sprinkled throughout, you can get a volcanic event that covers the, you know, blankets the sun, and you have a couple super cold winters. But we can't affect any of this. But we have so much hubris that we believe that by changing how much carbon man uses, we can actually slow or speed up these processes, which to me is like sitting in a canoe at the front of a glacier, you know, in a fjord, looking at a giant glacier and saying, shine your flashlight on that glacier. You're going to change it. You're not going to change it. These things that are in train have, you know, man is like a fly landing on an elephant for these things. And yeah, absolutely. We could get a national, you know, God might say, oh yeah, you think you're going to get this? I'm going to give you Naples and Yellowstone blowing up at the same time. And that could happen. I think that maybe God's getting a little bit upset with us.
Well, but, I was just, somebody, my phone blew up as soon as you said that, by the way. So thanks for that. I think so. The consensus is, at least if I'm reading the comments right, and by the way, my phone literally just blew up when you were talking about that. So Tom Longo did an interview with Ben Davidson. One of the things that Ben Davidson talked about, which I firmly agree with, is that he said that there's this energy coming from outside the solar system that's affecting all the planets and the sun all at the same time. So some of the points in history when there was extinction level events, it was because all of the planets were being affected, not just the Earth. And part of this disaster cycle is maybe it be emanating from outside of the solar system, right? So all the planets are being affected.
Maybe, but I don't think we need to look any further than the sun. I mean, the sun is such a huge, is such the main driver of all of this. If the sun is affected by something outside of the sun, who knows? That's like many jumps beyond where my mind can think that's, you know, likely or even worth really thinking about. The sun itself goes through these, like the Maunder minimum, sunspot cycles, things like that. But we don't need a catastrophe like the asteroid that wiped out the dinosaurs millions of years ago, or like a Tunguska asteroid blowing up, Boston to New York kind of. We don't even need anything like that. Just going into a mini ice age would be enough, because all of a sudden you'd have all these millions of people living in the north in climate control that are now freezing. And, or conversely, you can have something that, you know, the power goes out, you can't live in Phoenix. I'm sorry. Power goes out, you cannot live in Phoenix. There's no question. Yeah. You can't.
No water, no AC. Yeah. There's a lot of,
there were people living in Phoenix 200 years ago. They were called Apaches. They were very tough people, and there weren't many of them, you know, for that. There's the water that's there, like the Salt River, which is actually a beautiful river, Salt River Canyon, eastern Arizona. A mini Grand Canyon. It's beautiful, but it can't support millions and millions of people. So we've built all of these artificial habitats that I describe all the time, like an aquarium or a glass bubble on a planet kind of a thing. We think that that's natural, but it's not natural. It's completely artificial. You pull the plug on Phoenix, the people have got to go somewhere. Well, where are they going to go? If Denver is also out of power and Los Angeles is also out of power, who's going to organize the exodus?
It won't be organized. It won't be.
But there, who's going to fuel the buses and trucks? You know, it'll all lock up at the same time.
Yeah. And I think you're onto something, right? So you're, you know, but what I was, the reason why I was referencing Ben's point is that if that's, let's just say that's true and the earth is going through, or the sun is going through a cycle at the same time the earth is, that means the unpredictability of it gets exponentially bigger. But his point was, when we went through this back in the 1850s, whenever that event occurred, that the magnetic field was stronger. And now,
right,
it'll tip over the planet a lot easier because the magnetic field is much
something
weaker.
Much smaller than the Carrington event, because
the Carrington event, that's a good, wasn't coming to me. I wholeheartedly agree with that, because
our shields are down. The shield is down, so it wouldn't take as, even a Carrington event today would be way more catastrophic, because we don't have the same filtering from these solar flares that we had.
And I'm not saying that that's what is, you know, that's what's coming, but there's a lot of indicators now that show that there's a sense of urgency to bring the time, all these different lines of operation together. I definitively see there's a sense of urgency, because their demeanor has gone from slow, cool, calculated to what are you going to do about it?
And I don't think they're that smart. I don't think that they're that smart. Not Bill Gates,
not
George Soros's son, Alexander, that idiot, you know, not the heads of BlackRock and Goldman Sachs. I don't think that they're that smart, that they have secretly hired these geophysicists that have all, like in one of these movies like Armageddon, they've secretly told the Joint Chiefs, you know, in 3 months, we're going to have no solar protection. The pole's going to shift and weather's going to go haywire. I don't think we need that. I think that just human processes alone, even if the weather is status quo, no giant volcano, none of these things happens. Just the malfeasance of mankind to build up cities of tens, millions and tens of millions that have to have the power and the water brought in, have to. This is an artificial colony, just as artificial as if it was under a glass bubble on another planet. If anything happens, I love using this example. I don't have an ice pick here, but you know, this watch has like 500 little pieces in there. And if I stab an ice pick right into it and I only damage 1% of it, the whole watch stops. It can't work around that ice pick through that one cog. I only hit one cog, but the whole watch is going to stop. And that's what's going to happen to our big cities. And maybe something comes out of it. You know, the best spin on this is you have a percentage of a die-off that's tilted against urban areas. So let's say you have 50% die-off in rural areas, just, you know, generalizing, and 90% in the cities. Well, what's that going to do to the demographics in this country? You know, if 50% of the rednecks are left, but only 10% of the urban dwellers, it's going to be a new world on the other side of that. And there'll be a lot of, if there's no nuclear war, something like, you know, no catastrophic outer space cataclysm and no nuclear war. We just do this to ourselves with a, you know, complete global depression, supply chain breakdown, then social breakdown in the cities, you know, mass arson, looting, unbelievable horrors. But the infrastructure will still be standing there. At the other end of this, as little nodes of civilization start building and reconnecting, there will be a lot of infrastructure left. The population might be down 90%, but there will still be a lot of smart people around that remember how to, you know, wire transformers together. And they'll just be out there. They'll be standing out there. Everything won't be ruined. You know, there'll be people able to cannibalize systems and get small grids operating again.
We hope.
Yeah, well, that's this book, Doomsday Reef, 10 years after the end of the world as we know it. But, and that's the optimistic me, you know, after a 90% die off, Matt's so optimistic. He's like bringing cheer and gladness.
I definitely
the good side of a 90% die off.
Yeah, the cities, I'm a positive. The cities are hit worse. 90% of the population died off.
Cities are hit worse.
Flaming death. Yeah.
Right.
The thing I wanted to throw at you, Matt, is So I have, the best way to say it is, I don't see the event, the election happening. I see an event happening before that.
Yeah, the post office is already, they're putting out all kind of huge signals. The post office is already saying, our system is really faltering and we may not be able to deliver all the mail-in ballots in a timely fashion. And, you know,
oh, that's all bullshit. So they can delay the election. That messaging I knew was going to be here. No, I'm talking
Imagine having a government union in charge of delivering the ballots. And that sounds perfectly legit.
Oh yeah. What could possibly go wrong? Brown liquor and shotguns. What could possibly
It's like, go wrong? Oh, Republican trash can Democrat.
Well, in Washington State, they don't even hide anymore. Washington State, you have red and blue on the outside of the envelope. So red garbage, right. Like they made it easy for themselves to cheat. And people are like, oh, this is so amazing. Look, I could just kill you. Get another booster. Anyway, where I was going with this is I'm not the only one saying this. I've just since last week, I've probably had 10 conversations with a lot of officers that are some senior to me, some junior to me. They all think the same thing. Something big is coming. And it's before the election. Nobody I talk to, and maybe it's a small group of cynical, bitter people just like me, which is probably true, but they're all saying the same thing. They cannot allow this election to happen. For whatever reason, they cannot allow this election to happen. And so that's why I'm trying to
yeah. And if they, you know, if they're
go
if
down
they're
this
truthful,
road,
if their truthful internal polling is, let's just hypothesize that the Democrats, the deep state, they think it is Trump's lead is too big to rig. Let's just say they're going all man on the street and everybody's saying, Trump, I need a job. Trump, I can't pay my rent. Trump, inflation's too high. If they're convinced Trump is going to win and there's no way they can do the red blue curve, like 90 million. Wow. It's a miracle at 3 a.m. that can't fly. Then yeah, I think that they'll trigger a social implosion, some other form of a, you know, cyber attack is a good possibility because you can, as we've discussed often, you can lay a false trail with a cyber attack. It's not like a missile coming from Siberia. A cyber attack can be done by one group and attributed to another. So you can get a twofer effect out of it. The deep state can run a cyber attack like they ran the Russia hoax and then blame whoever they want to take the blame for it. They could say right-wing MAGA people did the cyber attack and use it as an excuse not only to shut down the internet, but to mass arrest key dissidents.
Well, they've already set conditions so they can blame Russia and claim some kind of retaliation. That card's already sitting on the table with Russia's surveilling all the undersea internet cables. That narrative's already out there. But you're right. I think that's a narrative they'll play too, right?
Oh, and in any kind of an escalation to kinetic war with Russia, and we're just about there, us blowing up the Nord Stream was really like poking a stick in Russia's eye. And then saying Russia did it, originally, and then laughably and insultingly saying it was like a chartered sailboat with some Ukrainians. It's another stick in their other eye, like mocking them. They have mapped out all of these fiber optic cables underneath. It's funny because it's like the natural gas pipelines underground. Nobody wants some cable company out there with a backhoe to cut into a natural gas pipeline and blow up a neighborhood. So they're really well mapped, which is good to prevent an accidental backhoe digging up and blowing up a natural gas pipeline. But it's really bad because the terrorists also have a map, or anybody that wants to do it. Well, the fiber optics under the sea are carrying 95% of our communication and data. And they're known where they are. And anything from a submarine to a warship to a merchant ship to a chartered fishing boat can just lay out an explosive line. It's like a flexible Bangalore torpedo. An explosive.
I know exactly what it is.
Explosive hose. I mean, we have these things to clear minefields where a humongous mortar round shoots something 300 Miklik. Yards out.
Yeah, it's called a Miklik, yeah.
And, well, you just have one of them that's created for putting it right at a right angle across the fiber optic cable. yeah, you can go out and repair that. You can't repair 100 of them, and you repair two of them and they cut another 100. So when we get into any kind of as opposed to like a full-scale nuclear exchange, we're going to start having possibly these small deniable attacks.
I think those are going to ramp up in the next month, Matt.
We've had already, I think, in the Black Sea, like accidental anchoring incidents. Yeah. Like, oops, we accidentally grabbed your pipeline. Whoops, sorry about that. I mean, that's very easy to arrange. I mean, there's a super tanker on fire in the Red Sea right now. It's not even in the news. It's like an Exxon Valdez on fire in a small contained sea, and nobody's taking care of it. That could be done 100 times. We go to war with Iran. They shut down the Strait of Hormuz. There's nothing we can do to open that. If we put Iran right to the wall, like, you know, gun to the head, we're going to destroy all your refineries, take out your grid, then they're going to say, world, hope you can get along without 20% of your petroleum, because no ship is going through the Strait of Hormuz until we say so. And that could be years. You know, they've got the terrain there is like Arizona, canyons, mountains for a hundreds of miles arc around the Straits of Hormuz, where these mobile anti-ship missiles on trucks are burrowed into caves and over hundreds of miles, 100 miles deep into the country. You couldn't, the Marine Corps of 1944 could not go in there and take those trucks out. It's pushing Iran to the brink is the same as saying, let's have a global depression when they stop the oil. Pushing Russia to the brink is the same as saying, let's test their Kinjal missiles and see how they can hit, like, you know, any base in Europe. And we have no defense.
Nope. And even if we wanted to have a defense, it's probably by this point been blown up at least. Because they've sent most of it.
We can't afford it. We don't have the industrial base. We don't have Russia has leapfrogged past us in technology and their industrial base. And they have the resources. We're like the town drunk that lives in a glass house that used to be, you know, the big prize fighter, and he's still going around picking fights with everybody.
And I think that's by design, Matt. I think that this is all by design, so they can, you know.
They would love to send the remnants of the military out somewhere to be destroyed. I think that they're itching
it's called chance Poland. To have
in Poland or an aircraft carrier sunk, something like that. That would suit them fine.
We know that's coming too, right? So they've this whole trip about long range weapons, I think that's just a bluff. That's all I think. I don't if they're dumb enough to do that, then it'll generate a response. But
the big response like 10 days ago was Poltava, which is where the mostly a lot of Swedes apparently died that were running the Ukrainian early airborne warning systems and teaching Ukrainians how to do it. But there were allegedly a lot of mystery flights of medevacs going out of Poltava all over Europe to NATO countries. You know, there's like an American colonel who like mysteriously died in Poland, like, you know, 6 hours after the missile hit Poltava. You know, so there's going to be a lot of Americans and Germans and Brits that are, you know, going to be dying in car crashes, or their
training next of kin
will be notified. Yeah, training accidents. But yeah. That hitting Poltava, and I think it was like a double tap. That with like Kinjal, we have no defense against. That was like saying, we know where your trainers are in Ukraine.
Oh,
if you're going to go deep into Russia, we can go into, we're not, you know, your staging areas in Poland are not going to be sacrosanct. You have no defense. I mean, we're building up. We've still got the 82nd in Romania. I mean, we're building all these forces. Look at, from Russia's point of view, it's like, you know, here come the Nazis again. And well, they don't mess around. Their culture is built on that great patriotic war. Their Victory Europe Day in Russia is like a huge thing every year with parades in every city where the people carry the pictures of their dead grandparents, you know, the dead grandfathers, the little kids dress up in World War II Russian military uniforms. I mean, that culture of Russia versus the outside world that's trying to come in and rape us is really powerful. We are messing with the wrong bear, thinking that we can, you know, get Putin to be so unpopular that there's like a coup inside Russia. I mean, the level of our thinking at the, you know, the Victoria Nulands and the ones that are still in, the Tony Blinkens, the level of their thinking is just, is it's so impossible to understand. Are they that retarded, or are they that insane, or do they just want to see it burn?
My answer to that is they're deconstructionist. If you look at that Obama and his whole administration, he was a deconstructionist. He spent his whole time deconstructing the Constitution, deconstructing civil rights, deconstructing the cultural narratives, deconstructing social media. Everything he did was to basically divide and conquer and destroy everything in the country. Everything that was an institution, everything sure. that was a, what do you call it? A tradition. I mean,
yep.
He was wholesale after the nuclear family. I mean, wholesale.
Oh, yeah. Look what they did to the Boy Scouts. Every good and decent institution in this country, they dragged through the sewer. Totally yeah. dragged through the sewer. I think that the reset is going to happen. It's not going to be who's taking over in Washington. For all I know, Washington could be a cinder or a crater when the rebuilding begins. But I think that the rebuilding is going to be on a regional, state, county. It's not going to be, let's all take orders from Washington. And there's going to be a point. I mean, even this communist traitor DeWine in Ohio, he's sending the state police to Springfield. So he's feeling the pressure, right? I mean, these exposés have been devastating to the Democrats coming into an election where people are seeing, oh, there's like a special line at the DMV where the Haitians that never drove a car and can't speak English, right, have the speed line with a translator. They walk out the door with a driver's license, and they're getting $5,000 a month put on their EBT card, which is pushing you know, white Ohioans out of their homes. You know, they can't afford to live there. So they're doing
the same thing in Europe, right? They're displacing the indigenous population with all these replacements. They're trying to bring the same thing here, but just doing it with different means.
If they were doing it with, say, the first wave Turks. Well, Turks are pretty smart. You know, Turks in Germany. They were brought in. There's an old German joke saying, "There's nothing as permanent as a temporary worker," a temporary foreign worker. So, the Turks, at least, on the average, have a pretty high IQ, and their cities work. You know, Turks can build bridges, Turks can build ships. But now they're bringing in people like the Somalis and the Haitians. These are people that cannot be employed by the U.S. Army at any level. You know, they can't be taught to put the bullets in the right way. When the Rwanda massacre happened, the Hutus versus the Tutsis, the Hutus were the majority, but they had always been, as they perceived it, oppressed by the Tutsis, who had been like the French clients. So when the French ran that part of Africa, and the British too, they would pick like the high IQ minority tribe and make them like the capos, the bosses, because they understood the local conditions better. Instead of having a French policeman, you could have a Tutsi policeman, and the director of the police is French. The French leave, the Hutus are the majority. When they did the massacre, the ratio was something like one AK-47 for every 20 machetes. So you don't need a high IQ. The highest IQ guy is taught how to load an AK-47. And the other 20 that aren't smart enough to load an AK-47 are given machetes. And that's who they are importing into our country. That level of savage is who they are deliberately importing into our country. And not a little. 5% of Haiti. 5%. It's a lot of people. And they've all got relatives they're going to bring over.
And that's why I say they're doing two things, well, multiple lines of operation at once, but bringing them in mass and putting them into one place means that
in small town America.
Well, that's to destroy the flyover country, right? fucking liberals also, have always hated flyover country in middle
pump.
America.
It's also the, what are you going to do about it, punk? What are you going to do about it? They're trying to provoke a kinetic response.
Well, they're going to get one. It's just a matter of who's going to be the first one to go off the reservation and smoke one of these Haitians or one of these Venezuelans that starts the kinetic off, right?
And somebody's going to do this, it, right? And when the cycle, as you know, history will teaches us that it'll be the federal government, like Little Rock School or the Freedom Riders in the South. It'll be the FBI coming in on the side of the Haitians, right? On the side of the Haitians to arrest people who like were posting on Facebook, you know, get rid of Haitians. Well, at a certain point, then the FBI is going to be seen as part of the traitor team. And they're spread very thin. You know, the working formula for the FBI for federal law enforcement is that they use the local police as their rangers and they are Delta. So 10 FBI can come in, but they know that they can get 30 of the local SWAT guys to do the perimeter, you know, and help them with some staging areas and motor pool kind of activities. That's going to end when the FBI is seen to be on the side of the traitors. Then the sheriffs are going to say, the hell with you, FBI. You don't get any motor pool service here. You don't get any logistical support. You don't get any backup. And in fact, somebody here is going to leak to the local militia what your raid target is. You know, that you're going to go up to that old trailer. I mean, this is like, gosh, I wrote this so long ago. You're going to have a fake tip to go to some trailer in the woods, and there's going to be 2 tons of ANFO underneath the trailer. You know, that these are the tactics that are tried and true. There's, and you just can't have 5 or 6 black SUVs driving out through West Virginia to go arrest some hillbilly. I mean, that was, what's that song, Copperhead Road?
Yeah, Copperhead, Steve Earle. Yeah.
But Steve Earle, great Steve Earle song. But that goes back all the way to the revenuers from the time of the early Treasury, you know, going after moonshiners. That you know, at a certain point, you just got to let the hill people alone. And that let the hill people alone kind of a situation is going to spread further and further out. It's going to be let the people in Springfield alone. And that, you know, I think that there's going to be some kinetic action. It could be false flag. I'm sure the FBI is right now, as we speak,
trying to lure
neo-Nazis into Springfield to do a march, you know, or run it themselves. They'll try to get like a Buffalo shooter to go to a Haitian market in Springfield.
Let's back up. The recent shooting with that kid that was supposedly trans, that was the third one in a row. They have a script. They have a profile. You can bet they probably have the same thing with neo-Nazis or whatever flavor.
That's what they want. And
absolutely.
And something that they haven't done in a big scale since Las Vegas is a mass shooting. And a mass shooting is very easy to pull off because, you know, you can have a couple hundred yards of range from the shooter to the, you know, bunched up population that they're shooting at. Then you can leave false clues. You can leave literature, you know, neo-Nazi literature at the sniper's hide. Sniper got away, you know, but he left neo-Nazi literature and neo-Nazi clues on the phone that he accidentally dropped. So yeah, we're going to see some crazy stuff before the election, especially if they think that Trump is going to win. It looks like I'm on my own here, folks. Oh, here we go.
My camera's all right. I've been sitting here trying to figure out what's going on.
Viking says the illegals are undocumented. No missing person reports will be filed. That's right. And, you know, there's a funny thing about varmint rounds. I was following NC Scout. He was doing some coyote hunting. And it's just amazing to think that people in this country have like the latest infrared technology that they can snap onto a scope and go out at night and pick off coyotes, which are not a large animal, at 200 yards in the woods in the dark.
Absolutely.
And an interesting thing about that is if you're using a high velocity, thinly jacketed high velocity varmint round, unlike on the cop shows, there's nothing for them to put into a little microscope to like say, oh, this bullet matches that. There's just chips. They'll be lucky to tell what caliber it was, depending on what is used. But
I want to back up a little bit, because there's two things that go along with the profiles. So the other thing that I've seen, which I haven't seen in years, is they're ramping up the rhetoric about neo-Nazis. Like, you know, for years, you remember there was the rumor back in the 80s about neo-Nazis in Northern Idaho.
Yeah.
They're all over. Don't go to Northern Idaho, especially Lake Priest.
Well, there was the Silent Brotherhood, the Bob Matthews and the Silent Brotherhood.
Yeah, but there was only a couple hundred of them. It was never a big problem.
Not even, right? Yeah.
And now, you know, Sandpoint's a hippie town. Most of Coeur d'Alene is overrun with Amazon people that have bought second homes there. I mean, the place is completely transformed. But I routinely see on Twitter now as they're ramping up the fear. Northern Idaho still has neo-Nazis, just like Eastern Idaho, which is complete fabrication, right? But they're already ramping up the rhetoric. So I'm agreeing with the fact that I think they are trying to build a narrative around neo-Nazis.
Well,
the reason why it hasn't gotten traction is as they turn the dial
with instigating, you know, actual attacks and doing false flag attacks, and, you know, cultivating people that are emotionally vulnerable, like these trans people or other people with mental issues, like this, the most recent shooter obviously had some father issues and his own mental issues. But as these people are cultivated and turned into weapons, that, you know, you're going to see a dialing up. But when the kinetic level goes to shooting at trucks on the highway. I mean, there's a guy in Kentucky they can't find, right? Shooting at cars on the highway.
What was the story there? I never did circle back to find out what the real story
shot up some vehicles and is just out there. So, I mean, then looking at history, pretty recent history, the Washington sniper, they attributed to a white man in a white van, had everybody going the wrong way for a couple of weeks. Then you had the ex-cop out in California. He was running around shooting at police for a few days, and the police went so crazy that the police were like shooting up innocent cars based on suspicion. So if you actually get let's say, for example, the FBI starts arresting dissidents, they interpret under President Kamala Harris, they interpret your Twitter post as incitement, and they have a new anti-terrorism law for incitement. It's sort of following the British playbook, which they absolutely are going to do. They're going to say, well, these words are now considered incitement. We're going to arrest you.
Oh, did you see that video this week where they basically arrested a gal that got assaulted because she was swearing and there was three of these snowflakes standing around her?
But when the police become, especially federal, associated with the invaders, they're going to be targets. And this is a country, we've never seen a civil war in a country where there were millions of 400 plus yard rifles. If in the Afghanistan context or Iraq context, one or two guys loose in the city that knew how to shoot at 600 or 800 was like, whoa, task force time. This is really serious. We've got a guy who knows how to move and shoot. Right, how to get away from sniping at Americans?
Yep.
600, 700 yards. You can't count that number of people in America. and you, something also in my first book, Enemies Foreign and Domestic, you can't count out the 80-year-old that just says, "I'm done," and at a traffic stop, just, you know, at a checkpoint when they get to the point of checkpoints, which they'll have to do. You know, we're going to have checkpoints against terrorism, the search for illegal weapons. Some people are just going to say, that's it. I've lived long enough.
By the way, it can go haywire
very fast.
Brings up a very good point. If you guys haven't read Matt's book, Enemies Foreign and Domestic, I highly recommend that you do. Because in the first part of the book, and I can say this, you know, as an FFL, a federal firearms licensee, I can tell you this. There's a part in the book where they're in a gun shop and a DH or a ATF agent comes in, and Matt talks about the profile. That profile to a T is a number of people that I met at DC that were a part of the ATF and a part of DHS. Should read it, because that's the profile dealing with right now.
I'm not on a tangent. This is actually completely related, because it relates to DEI. And, Shaniqua is an FBI agent now. She's not only an FBI agent, she's a supervisor. You know, she's leading a Secret Service team. And that's why she decided she didn't need to go to the meeting that morning. She didn't need to get radios from the local police or put anybody on that building, because Shaniqua doesn't give a damn. Shaniqua was, or the other lady was breastfeeding her baby, you know, on duty. So there's a guy on I think it was Substack, but he goes by Gato Malo, Bad Cat. And he has this unique, like, E.E. Cummings kind of style. He writes all lower cap. But he, what was the title of it? It was like from yesterday or the day before. But he has a great explanation for how societies fail through this crisis of competence. What explains the crisis of competence? And he says, this made so much sense to me. He divides people into A-type people, B and C-type people, and even D-type people. The A-type people are epitomized by, like, Houston ground control, 1960s and 70s. You see that picture of all the guys with their pocket protectors and their glasses? Type A people really get the big picture, and they hire and want to be around other type A people. I don't mean type A in terms of aggression or anything like that. It's just a category of intellectual understanding of the big picture of how an organization can function at high efficiency, you know, make a profit, make new technology, all of that. So type A people, they only want to hire other type A people. They understand that the way you get to the moon is to hire geniuses and have geniuses hire and work with other geniuses, hard charging, smart people that are all hired strictly on merit. You know, grades, what have you done? Show us your inventions. You know, what have you done? Show us some code you wrote. Type B people, when they infiltrate an organization based on DEI, largely on DEI, they hate the type A people. The type A people make them look stupid. And so when these type B people become supervisors in a corporation or in the military, anywhere, when they achieve a level of you know, mid-level management, they aren't even going to hire type Bs, because other type Bs will work as hard as them and make maybe, you know, surpass them. So they hire type Cs because they'll always look smart compared to the type Cs. And this rot permeates upward right through an organization. And you can see it happening even at, like, you know, Harvard Medical School, things like that. 5 years ago, everybody said DEI will never get into STEM or medicine, that kind of. It just wouldn't work. Well, it did. Now you can't get into medical school unless you write your DEI thesis of, you know, how white people are evil and we have to atone for our sins. This is how the B and C people get in. They run Boeing now, obviously. The people that put the wings on the Boeing airplanes don't care if it's 14 rivets in a straight line or 17 rivets crooked. They don't care. They don't understand the point. When it was all type A people working at Boeing, from, you know, the senior management to the wrench turner, they knew that the blueprint had to be followed exactly. And you couldn't cut corners. You couldn't hide work.
Let's add some flavor to that. Back then, if you didn't follow the schematic and you didn't follow the diagrams, you either A, got bitch beat by somebody in the union because their quality went down and they were measured against the quality that they were delivering within their specific team and on the floor, or you got fired. Now we don't do that.
Now you can't fire them because you can't fire Shaniqua. If you fire Shaniqua, then you are going to be fired for being a racist. This is why we had two of our best destroyers run into tankers, like, in the same year, because the commanding officer is in his cabin praying that he just gets to the end of his tour of duty without a disaster happening, much less a war, because it used to be that the surface warfare officer pin had to, was a real achievement, and you could never be the officer of the deck unless you had gone to SWO school, you know, done a deployment, done all these PQS tests like you can't even believe, working like a son of a bitch for you know, a year, 18 months, 2 years to get a SWO pin. But if you have, and these are like some of the most dangerous words in English language, if you have a disparate outcome, wait a minute, not enough of our favorite minorities are getting a SWO pin. They seem to fail. Well, that's proof right there that you're, that the organization is racist. You have to start from, there must be an equal number of all my favorite minorities in these extremely difficult positions that used to be an achievement.
Oh yeah.
Now, the people running the ship are dumbasses. They're B and C people on their smartphone having a squabble with the girl down in combat information center. I'm not going to tell her what I saw on the radar because she's sleeping with my hoe. So I'm not even going to tell her, bitch. So there's ships are running into each other. Imagine if we're in a war. I mean, and this is why the military can't recruit. People sense this. They know this is going on in the military.
By the way, Matt, let me just stop here. The most dangerous words in the world are, sir, with all due respect, because nothing good ever follows that statement. And that is the worst thing that any officer will tell you. Any enlisted will walk through their room and says, sir, with all due respect, or their office, trust me, the first thing they say is turn around and stop talking.
Well, I don't know how Falcon has managed to do it, or Elon Musk, but he must have some magic trick for the meritocracy, because
no, he fires people.
Boeing could do the same thing. Boeing and NASA could do the same thing that he does.
Yeah,
Boeing and NASA's primary motivation and directive is diversity at all costs, even if the planes, you know, crash.
Well, they're going to pay for that, but Musk is firing people because SpaceX, if you're not delivering there, you're out the door. Same with Blue Origin.
Well, it's not just the quality of the airplanes. The air traffic controllers, they saw a disparate outcome in the air traffic controllers, and they took all of these European, shall we say, people out of the pipeline that had already been, you know, through all the training, and said, take a hike, because we are going to triple promote all the people that scored a 60 on the air traffic control test. And we're going to give them 30 points for being the right color or the right, you know, gender persuasion. And now you've got air traffic controllers that can't keep two airplanes apart on the runway at Atlanta Hartsfield.
And technically that's mostly bad. So
yeah, that's,
Jesus, rented lips. DEI is just one symptom of a bigger problem. And the bigger problem is they're trying to destroy the whole concept of a merit-based work system, right? Or the best person for the job. That's the intention there, right? But it's really designed to make sure that middle-aged white men don't have a career. That's what it's really designed for. Because
everybody needs to go and rewatch Michael Douglas in the movie Falling Down, because there could be a rash of that breaking out.
Well, I don't think we're too far away from that either.
Yeah.
The real question is going to be, and I think everybody in America is thinking the same thing. What is the catalyst that's going to drive somebody off the reservation? Because they're really they're pressing all the buttons right now to figure out who's going to go off the reservation.
Did you see the father in Springfield that whose son Aiden was killed by a Haitian drunk driver or reckless driver? He said, I only wish that my son had been killed by a white person so the racists wouldn't be using it to attack the Haitians.
It's like, yeah, there's a word for that. Cuck.
Super cuck.
My God, somebody paid him.
But there's no other side. There's the other side too, though, where there's somebody whose relative dies and is going to go paging Paul Kersey, you know, Charles Bronson. And I saw something by NC Scout this morning on the anniversary of 9/11. And he said, you know, the after the global war on terror led to a huge, huge buildup of a really great expert military. I'm paraphrasing very badly, and they're all home now. Yeah. All these guys that learned the GWAT guys, they're home now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they have, and a lot of them have better weapons than they had before.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I you know, the thing that I, so we're an hour and a half. Can you go a few more minutes?
Yeah.
Because there's one last thing before we do closing comments that I want to pick your brain on. JD Vance, do you think he's going to survive the entire campaign, or do you think they're going to replace him with RFK?
No, I think that they'll stay in. I think RFK is not going to be vice president. I think that if Trump could win and if he could be inaugurated, I think that RFK could be attorney general, head of any cabinet that he wants. I think he could, if he wants to be Mr. Maha, make America healthy again, he can it's disgusting how we have this revolving door between, big food, big pharma, and big medicine, where they make us sick. They get you hooked on the medicine that you need to not die from the food they feed you. And the people that put this poison out, the vaccines, the shitty food with a million ingredients, it's like the Three Mile Island Love Canal when you read the ingredients, right? It's like the outflow. These guys go to work for Big Pharma after they're working for the government. I mean, this is atrocious. They get paid to approve poison, then they get a job at Big Pharma or Big Food, Big Agriculture. So Bobby Kennedy could be like the who cleaned out the stables. I forget. I'm not big on the mythology, but or Jesus and the moneylenders. Go in there with the big broom. you're out.
I would love to. I think RFK could do a lot of good in any position too. I think he's, get away from his politics. The fact,
just keep him away from guns.
Yeah,
but put him in charge. Put him in charge of Department of Health, and like Trump said many times last night, Kamala didn't fire any of these people. You're fired. I'll fire people. If RFK says I'll take this job as Secretary of I don't know what would be the best thing. Ben Cartwright, Ben Carson, what was his position before?
Health and Human Services.
And just say, you have carte blanche to fire anybody. Fire half of them. Fire three quarters of them.
Yeah.
Fire them.
You wouldn't want me to be the sec def, because I'd be walking down the hallways with a baseball bat.
Right. People like Steve Bannon.
Oh yeah,
and that's their nightmare. That's why they would poison him or blow up his plane before they'll see him inaugurated.
Well, it's because we all have an axe to grind now, right? We watch these people fuck over our country, destroy our military. We have an axe to grind,
you want to play lawfare? You want to play lawfare? We'll show you some lawfare.
Oh, dude, this is exactly what I would do. I would walk into the fishbowl as sec def, and I'd say, "Who here believes in DEI?" And of course, all those general officers, those lemmings, and most of them are gay anyway, would raise their hands. You're fired. Resign today. Drop your white paperwork today. Do not come back here, or I will have you arrested. And I would go all the way down to the fucking janitor, and I would get rid of everybody on the civilian side too. You with the fucking hair, you with the pants, pull your fucking pants up. You are out of here. Oh,
I was wishing that Trump would have done this last time.
Oh God.
There were documents, the FBI and the FBI, CIA, NSA, they were all creations of Congress, right? The FBI is not in the Constitution, right? There's no FBI in the Constitution. It's a creation of Congress. Congress could tomorrow say, FBI, your budget is zero. Okay. You can keep going to work for the, but the lights are going to go out because there's not going to be electricity in the building and your paycheck will be zero. So, what can we say? There's no more FBI. They could do that tomorrow. I was waiting for Trump, and maybe this will happen. It's a dream. He should, when they were just saying, no, we can't give you these documents back during the Russia hoax, they were stonewalling. Congress is saying, you know, we have a subpoena for these documents. And Christopher Wray, they're just like, no, it's national security, too sensitive, screw you. Allegedly, Congress is over the FBI. Clearly, Frankenstein's monster has outgrown the creator. But President Trump or next year Steve Bannon, I'd like to see him go into the Department of Justice with like 100 U.S. Marshals. Oh, and each U.S. Marshal's got like, a, you know, 50 of the duplex flex cuffs. Well, we're going into this office. We're opening a safe. You're giving me these documents. You want to say no? Arrest him. Yeah. Who's next? Yeah. Open this safe right now.
Oh, right now. Yeah.
Right now.
They don't go to a U.S. prison. They go to Gitmo. And they cool their heels in Gitmo until their trial date. And then they stand trial for treason. Every fucking one of them. Yeah, I would go through that place. I'm telling you, I'd go through DOD. It'd be ugly. But that's a different story, different show. But let's wrap this up. Any final comments for the audience? Because we've gone through a lot of topics.
If you've got so much ammunition and all the guns you're ever going to need, start stocking up on things that have a long shelf life, like soap. Can't have enough food. It's like a lesson over and over again. It's like Fernando on Modern Survivalist says, you know, I got friends in Venezuela. They said, ultimate prepper, I had 2 years worth of food. Yeah, it ran out 15 years ago. You know, you can't have and move to a place where they grow food.
Yeah.
If you don't know where your water comes from, if you don't understand, you know, if you've got all these guns and body armor and scopes, but you're on city water and you don't know what would happen if the power went out, I think you should consider moving. Just absolutely. Personally.
So we'll be back tomorrow night with the audio version of the roundtable. If you like what we're doing, folks, hit the follow button. That actually helps spread the word and get us out in front of other audiences, especially on Rumble, because I think
I'm on Twitter and Gab. I'm always on Gab. I parallel post Twitter and Gab so that when I get banned from Twitter again, I'll still be on Gab. But you know, you can get my books from me. This is like, you know, who could have seen that coming 20 years ago?
You know, and he'll actually gangs sign are taking the books. Over. But he'll actually sign the books.
Yeah, I'll sign the books. You can get them from, if you want the Kindle or Audible versions, Amazon. But if you get them from me, I'll sign them. And, you know, I get a better cut than if you buy them from Amazon.
And this all I'll say for closing comments. I don't know what's coming, but I feel like something is coming. And a lot of other people that I've talked to, former military, all think the same thing. Yeah, whatever is coming, definitely. Now is time to exercise, do your gear, use your stuff. Today I was on the range yesterday and today all day with Troop. We did some drills today. I think he's going to post some of the videos of it. Some of the stuff we were doing is not really realistic, but it was a good exercise. We were more interested in doing team movement with firearms and showing how difficult that is and how hard and how much muscle memory that takes. And, you know, shout out to Tree Girl for going through 2 days with Troop and being in the hot sun here. And she did a lot of training in 2 days. So it was a good exercise, but now's the time to use your stuff. I said this Monday, I'll say it again. This is the time to do. We're on the event horizon. I don't know what that event horizon is. I just know we're on the event horizon. We've been here for 6 months. But now we're running out of time. That time effectively.
Yeah. Our enemies are afraid of going to prison and they will do anything to keep Trump out of office, including setting this country on fire.
Absolutely. I'll be back tomorrow night, everyone. Thank God. We'll see you tomorrow night. One team, one fight. God bless.
Good night.